This is Summers McKay, and you're listening to Lovegasm, a podcast where I interview leading experts on topics of sexual health and intimacy in an effort to provide educational and inspirational content with the goal of inspiring you to make love more. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Lovegasm, the Make Love More interview series. I am here today continuing the conversation with Dr. Megan Fleming. We got into a juicy discussion about invisible divorce in our last segment. I think everyone who hears that phrase, invisible divorce, kind of knows immediately what it means and either has witnessed a couple that they see in it or are finding themselves in one. So, Dr. Megan, can you give us just some framework, different types of invisible divorces that people might find themselves in?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, sometimes it's the sexless marriage. And that's sort of defined by sex less than 10 times in a year. And I certainly see a lot of those in my practice. Again, they might be incredibly great, like roommates, and it's sort of like running an LLC, you know, they can run the corporation together, but, they've lost their connection with one another.
The sexless marriage. So, that was a really interesting tidbit to me a sexless marriage or a marriage that's absent of sufficient sex is less than 10 times a year. Yeah. I actually think that's probably a lot more common than most people know.
It's disturbingly common. And that is such a huge issue in that, you know, there are books on the topic. My friend and colleague Esther Perel wrote Mating in Captivity. I mean, there are many, many, many reasons that, you know, desire can fade or be challenged in a long-term monogamous committed relationship. That being said, it doesn't need to look that way. And I think when people resign themselves to, you know, this is it or as good as it gets, or I've tried everything, like that to me is like, did you try to be vulnerable? Like, you know, I can always point out what you haven't yet tried if you're willing. And so, like I said, it's an opportunity for growth if people want to, look at it, but it's to realize if you're not being sexual and in your marriage or even with yourself, it's like, to me, that's such a huge part of our life source and our vitality and that ability to be, we're talking about mindfulness and meditation and those things, you know, it's about the present moment, right? To be fully present and alive, I think you got to be connected to your body and your sexuality. And, you know, again, I think the biggest turn on for most couples is feeling your partner's desire. So if that's gone out, it should be a huge warning sign, red flag, that something you guys need to, you know, self-help books, therapy, really see that it shouldn't look that way.
The statement you just made about the biggest turn on is feeling your partner's desire. And, I think that's really, really precious to remind ourselves that it's sexy when our partner desires us, when they want us. And
absolutely.
Like that's just this gift, right? When somebody wants us and it's our partner and it's our mate. And then you talked about that when you don't have that, when it's absent, finding resources. If there is a couple, is it important that they go to couples therapy together? Is it important they research this together? Can one partner do it on their own?
Yeah, again, that's a great question. You know, I do think ideally, you know, it goes better, right? If you both see it, you're both in consensus, right? You're both distressed about it. You both want it to change and you're both willing to take action. I mean, that's an easier path. That being said, I think one person can single-handedly sort of turn it around. And by that, I mean, again, it's sort of doing 100% of your 50%, right? You can't do your partner's share. But if all of a sudden, instead of being that reactive, however yours looks, right, angry, loud, or shut down, don't talk to you for 3 days or more, you know, if all of a sudden you're working on what you're putting into the relationship space, right? Like your actions, your words, and how it impacts your partner and how it makes them feel. If all of a sudden you start showing up with your best of yourself, that's what drew your partner to you in the first place, right? That was that law of attraction. So if all of a sudden you start doing that in a consistent way, and consistency is key, because your partner might notice and be like, oh, but but like, I can't count on that. I can't trust that. And you're going to turn around and be the bitch next second, right? You have to, have to do it consistently. And then all of a sudden it's like, it's very reactive. It's reflexive, right? That if you feel that open, expansive, interested, curious, attracted to you energy, that they're in time, because again, they might be suspicious and dubious about your intentions, but if they see that it's from a genuine place and not from a manipulative place, I really think that even one person alone can turn the tide.
Yeah. It's, you know, something like 30 to 40 days to create new habits.
Yep.
And the Catholic in me says 40 days because it's always Lent. But if you say to your husband or you say to yourself, okay, my marriage is, I'm in this invisible divorce and we aren't making love and we aren't talking and we aren't communicating. I'm going to give myself 40 days to try to be my best, positive, most present self. Do you have any tools for someone who might be going through that to keep up the momentum, to keep the faith?
Sure. I mean, first of all, the first thing I would say is, again, it starts with a commitment or recommitment, right? To be my best self. But importantly, I call it visualization. Can you picture it? Can you picture yourselves back as that loving, connected couple? Because so often I find that that's where the block starts. It's like I can want, talk the talk, but I don't see it. I can't imagine. I can't feel it. I can't picture it. And I always say, if you can't picture it, how can you possibly make it come to pass? So I would have people start with that, imagining, picturing, seeing themselves, feeling themselves on the other side where they are feeling connected and passionate. I think it starts there. And then it's like a mindfulness consciousness practice. You have to sort of check in with yourself at the beginning of the day. It's like about your personal integrity at the end of the day. Like I always say to couples, like, no matter how it goes, I never want you to potentially separate or divorce and then have the regret. If only I would have, could have, should have done something. But your pain, your frustration, your I won't because they won't, you know, whatever that is, don't let that be the reason you didn't step up. Mm-hmm. Because if you step up and give your 100%, no matter how it goes, you have that peace of mind. And I really think if you, 40 days, great number, 30, 21, even some people say, Gretchen Rubin wrote the book, you know, Better Than Before, and it's all about our habits and our practices and our behaviors. And so trying on in a consistent way, a new behavior, a new way of showing up, I think will lead to different results, but it's recognizing that the value of doing that is really for you. It's for your peace of mind.
Yeah. Well, and I think there are times where people may look at it and say, I want this marriage to end, or I'm done. And so the process of gently unwinding and lovingly and respectfully unwinding a relationship is really challenging. But in this instance, you're really talking about when it's different. You're talking about when you want to, either you can't end the marriage, as you indicated, or you don't want to. How do people differentiate between that moment? How do you pick?
I mean, that's a million-dollar question, right?
Yeah, so give us an answer, and we will have $1 million on the table. It'll be perfect.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the part I want to sort of backtrack, and I'm glad it came up, is I call it the narrative, and it's not just me. I mean, you know, collective conscious, we all have these. But the narrative, the story you tell yourself about who I am and who I'm not, who my partner is and who they aren't. And to realize, again, it's in our minds, it's this shortcut. You know, it's like, oh, there we go again, you know, and it's like what we focus on expands and what we resist persists. So I think first of all is to get really curious with your own narrative. What are you telling yourself about who you are and who you aren't, who your partner is and who they aren't, and where, and again, that visualization, you know, are you even open to influence that idea that it could look different or change? I think that's a big piece of it. You know, I really think ultimately marriage is, it's about a commitment. And you know, it's again, it's like, it's not about finding the right partner. It's about being the right partner. You know, so often it's like, oh, this isn't working. And our culture of consumption and, you know, on to the next one, it'll be better then. But, you know, we're not really conscious of how we recreate those same scenarios. Like, you know, they say, wherever you go, there you are. So, that's the one thing I would say to anybody who's in that question and wondering, just make sure you've looked at your side of the street. You've gone beyond the finger pointing, because I'm telling you, you will recreate it if you haven't looked at your side of the street and worked on, and what part of this is you.
Yeah, that a big part of my interest in this whole world is after the end of my first marriage, after I unpacked it and unwound it and understood what went wrong. And then I looked myself in the mirror and I said, I want to be married again. I want to be happy. I want to be a parent. So how do I not do that again? Mm-hmm. How do I make it better? And so that speaks to the divorce rate. And, you know, certainly, unfortunately, they say more marriages fail than succeed. And unfortunately, even more second marriages fail than succeed. And I personally would like to change that rate. The goal of my company is in many ways to minimize second divorce rate and ultimately, you know, decrease first divorce rate. How can people really be reflective after a relationship has ended as they enter into a new one without feeling like they're bringing too much baggage?
Well, I mean, again, great questions. And you know, I could ask you personal things, but I won't do it here.
Oh, you're welcome to. You're absolutely welcome to.
It's something I like for you to appreciate, like in yes. your own first and second marriage. It's like the aware. Like I think we only know. I always say this expression: we only know what we know, right? And I think sometimes you don't know it the first time. I mean, I consider myself a serial monogamist. You know, my first relationship was third kiss through 5 years. You know, and then I had a 2 year, and then you know, like.
Right.
And ultimately I met my husband. And so like I got to see in my own life patterns a little bit because of my experience. And I think in my experience, a lot of people, they don't necessarily have that pattern in their own life so that they can, even before a marriage or divorce, reflect a little bit consciously on what part of it is them. Because it just, the thing about emotions is they feel so true, right? Mm-hmm. And I sort of say, like, it's great for women because you've had PMS, so you kind of know that one, right? It feels so true. And then a day or two later, you're like, well, it's a little bit amplified, right?
Oh, that is such a perfect description. The thing about emotions is they feel so true. It's and so then you're, true. You're so right. And then like 3 days later, I mean, I was the woman crying at the DMV yesterday. I really legitimately was, because they wouldn't waive my late fee. So,
right. And we get hijacked. Yeah. This goes back to our nervous system, and we're mammals at the end of the day. And when you realize just because it feels true doesn't mean it is true. You know, the cognitive therapist, we call it emotional reasoning.
Uh-huh.
So I think that is a key point for people to recognize, because – you know, again, it can breed the hopelessness and some of the finger pointing. But anyway, it's just that piece of just getting curious. And you may or may not have that a relationship history to look upon yourself. But like I was curious for you, like, do you now see patterns of the frustration and the pain points?
Absolutely. Yeah.
They have
absolutely.
A way of replicating themselves.
Completely. And, you know, I was very fortunate that I was in a reflective time, and I created a process, a healing process for myself, which I called Naked with Chanel No. 5, where shortly after my marriage ended, I was just making egregiously bad man decisions and fell in love with a coworker. And then when that didn't work out, started dating his roommate, because that seems healthy. And all of a sudden found myself just making terrible man choices. And so I had this pivotal moment where I realized I had to stop. And I had to stop and spend time with myself. And so every night for 40 nights, I started Lent a little late that year. I went home and I got in bed and I got naked and I sprayed Chanel No. 5 and I journaled. And I journaled myself through healing and learning and really the 5 stages of grief. I would love to give that tool to many other people so that they can heal in a healthy way. But patterns rise up all the time. And now that I'm aware of them and bring them to the marriage that I have, I'm so much gentler with myself and gentler with my husband.
It's huge.
Yeah.
It's huge. And like I said, I probably at some point in maybe the beginning, but that, you know, nobody teaches us about relationships, and certainly not about our emotions. And how we react to frustrations and how we co-create our realities. And, you know, taking that time for stillness, reflection is, it's so huge and important. And so, you know, your big million dollar question was like, you know, sort of do I stay or do I go? And I think you first got to really sit with yourself a long time and really be curious about your own contribution, because people do, it's so much easier to go on to the next one. And of course the romantic phase, you know, but I always say it's like an apple and orange comparison, you know, it's like, they're not the same. And of course one's going to feel so much easier, better, but spend some time in it and you realize more often than not, the same stuff's going to come up. So to me, helping people stick in the stuff and realize, like, you know, that's, you know, where the rubber meets the road, like that yeah. is the opportunity to really get to know yourself and to turn it around.
In kind of your exploration of the invisible divorce, I think that there are a few other invisible divorce types, and I'd love if you could just share a few of what those are so that people can maybe identify, hey, yeah, I'm in the middle of it. It's time to do some work.
Yeah. I mean, I think, I sort of coined this, but like, again, I think we could be multiple versions of these. And the biggest thing I would say to anybody listening is, what's the feeling I'm having, right? Mm-hmm. And because if I'm feeling alone, if I'm feeling disconnected, if I'm feeling there's someone better out there, it's that quality that I want to be the wake-up call, right? Because I don't think it has to look or feel that way. You know, but other versions I sort of talk about, so we talked about the sexless marriage. Sometimes it's that scream out loud couple, which is like, everybody else is like, holy crap. Like it's
yeah, let's not have them over for dinner again.
Everybody else is like, wow, the decision is very clear. You guys need a divorce. And the data is pretty clear that that's unhealthy for your kids. And yet there's such a I mean, it's a passionate couple, but, like I said, it's like a tornado on a volcano, and they don't necessarily see how toxic that is. And what it really is hearing myself say that is when I said earlier, it's like you fight or flight.
Yes.
You know, the fight energy, we call it maximizing energy, and the flight energy is minimizing energy, right? Constricts. Yeah. So you basically have two fighters.
Yes.
That's what happens if you get that scream out loud, right? You've got two they're pursuers, they're maximizers, and they go at it. So that could be a version of it. You know,
that speaks a little bit to gender roles and traditional gender roles in marriage and how they can play out over time. And if you've got two fighters, in many ways, those are two, you know, whether it's male, female, yin, yang, whatever, you've got, you know, two yangs, two male energies that are just fighting like crazy. Can you talk a little bit about the balance of gender roles and, you know, does that play into any of these, you know, divorce or invisible divorce situations?
Well, I mean, again, I think that's a great, interesting question. I mean, it's so most commonly in a marriage or a union, you see opposite energies, right? You see a minimizer and a maximizer. We call it a pursuer or distancer. Like, and that's the defensive protective energy, as I say that, you know, it's like when you feel like threatened. And it's because you're complements to each other. It's like you said, it's a yin and a yang. You know, ideally we're embracing the yin and the yang in ourselves, like, you know, it's the idea we were born whole, and then based on what we did or didn't get in childhood, typically we have overdeveloped parts of self, underdeveloped parts of self, lost parts of self, and disowned parts of self. So, you know, the idea is you get together with a partner who ideally represents some of that opposite energy, things you'd like to be more like. Like I said before, you want to kill it off, but
yes. Before you know, familiarity breeds contempt. The stuff you wish you were more of.
Laid back becomes lazy, that kind of thing. And the on top of it becomes controlling, and you know, there are all those versions. So, but I think it's appreciated. So most couples have that opposite energy, and although I think understandably, and I live in it also, difficult to negotiate, it's the beauty of it. And I think that because I just said sort of those two maximizing energies, it can look the opposite. You know, I don't see it much in my office, but occasionally I get the two minimizers and like, there's no energy there at all. You're like, It's like trying to get something from them, you know, and it's like, how does that even work?
Yeah.
But it works, mm-hmm. you know, so it's not to judge in any way who we are or who we partner up with, because some people prefer to be with sort of two masculine aggressive energies. Some people prefer to be with two minimizing, and we probably consider that feminine energies. And I would say the most of us, it's like the opposite, you know, energy, the yin yang.
Right.
And I sometimes refer to that when it's atypical, I call it the gender bender, right? So by that, I mean, when somebody who's a man and is a man, and again, isn't gay or anything like that, but he just embodies a more, in a feminine, again, we're talking about 40 days in Christian, like Jesus is a man, but he's very much a feminine energy.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Yeah.
And I, as a woman, I'm a little bit alpha, right? So I've got a lot of masculine energy, and sometimes I'm curious what my testosterone would be, right? But, you know, it's one of those things where, in my mind, ideally, it's the complementarianism of opposing energies that can create conflict, but also can create amazing connection.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In my relationship, I am obviously also very aggressive and passionate and driven, and I am very much a alpha per se. And in my previous relationship, my partner said that there couldn't be two alphas, and I really wrestled with that idea because I didn't agree. I want someone who is as strong or stronger. I want an alpha, and I am so fortunate that I kind of worked that out to figure out that there can be room for, you know, two captains. There can be room for two, you know, strong people in a relationship. And I think you're right that it's about finding the way that, you know, if you are both alpha, do your alphas complement? Do they complement each other? And can your energy, you know, and I think I want to extract an exercise out of this conversation that I would like everyone listening to go and grab a journal and write down the things about your partner when you first were dating that you wanted to be more like. Because you're so right, when laid back becomes lazy, and so suddenly you're annoyed at him laying on the couch eating cookies. But long ago you thought, God, I wish I had the energy to sit on the couch sometimes and chill. So I think that's an exercise I want to assign to everyone listening. Write down the things that you used to really think were amazing and you wanted more of in your own life.
Absolutely. And then I'd add to that and follow up with me to do this. I have a then and now. It's a list of then eccentric, now crazy, right? Then take charge person, now control freak. You know, it's a whole list of like childlike becomes childish and self-aware becomes narcissistic, you know. And
will you please write a blog about that so we can link it in the show notes, please?
Oh, that would be fun. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. But, so everyone, you have homework to go make those lists, and Megan, you have homework to put up, you know, Dr. Megan is going to share this list with us. So everybody wins.
Yeah. It's just funny to look at because everybody's like, oh my God, that's so true.
Dr. Megan, I can't thank you enough for sharing what you've shared in this conversation. I certainly feel inspired, and not that this series is about me and my relationship, but it is about everyone listening and all of theirs. There are just a few questions that we like to ask our guests as we wrap up. The first one being, could you describe your perfect date night?
I have such a nail to the chalkboard feeling about that word perfect. having the PhD and this and that, I always say to my kids, there is no perfect, because if you have, and I never realized that for a long time that was a part of me, that mm-hmm. anyway, if you're somebody who struggles with that, that's just a setup. So mm-hmm. there's no perfect. Let's just start there.
All right. A really, really good one.
Exactly. I'm always like, let's not do perfect because that's just a setup. And as I say that, the other setup is expectations. Mm-hmm. You know, I think in your mind's eye, if you have a vision, you know, like for me, you know, getting married, and I forget the Alanis Morissette song, you know, it rains on your wedding day, right? Mm-hmm. Well, it was cloudy and it sort of rained on my wedding day. That kind of sucked, right?
Oh, but yeah.
just is acceptance and don't let it hijack your day. So I think if you have a vision of your perfect date night or whatever it is, first of all, have a loose vision and realize, I don't know, and you don't know what's about to happen. So go with it and don't let whatever might unexpectedly happen, quote unquote, like ruin or destroy it is I think a huge point. And the other is just the energy and the anticipation. You know, it's like, oh my God, I really want to. And I mean, I could give you my own, but it's like fill in your own blank, right?
Yeah, no, what give us your own. It's a little insight if you don't mind.
Well, I mean, I don't know if it's a date night, but one of my favorite things is like Tomorrow World. I'm a huge electronic dance music quiet raver. So, you know,
oh, like, I love it.
So me and a group of friends, my friend I used to live with in the West Village, she lives in Ottawa. Anyway, we all, like, this is the second year in a row, as couples, we all go down to Tomorrow World and we party and rave for 2 or 3 days. And that's like, you know, that's like a high point of my year. But so, you know, as far as my husband, like, first of all, I love dancing and I love live music. And, you know, it's just sort of the energy and the passion. And I think it's just, you know, that eye gazing, I want you, grab your ass kind of, you know, moment. And however you guys, the thing again, as we talked about earlier, is prioritizing it. Because, you know, I do have 2 kids and I thought in my 30s, I'm like, I have no time. And now I'm like, holy crap, I had a ton of time. What was I thinking? So yeah, just prioritize the time and each other, make it happen and play on your like, I sometimes say to my couples that I work with, like, you pick it this week, she picks it next week. You know, it's like, you know, find the balance that works for you both, but that you both are co-creating the things that make you even hotter.
That kind of refers to the first segment of our conversation about having lots on the menu and picking the restaurants, right? Yeah. So,
and the appetizers and the desserts, right?
Yeah, exactly. What piece of sex or love advice you've either received or heard over the years, and how would you want to correct it?
Again, I don't know if it's advice per se, but it's a, you know, movies and entertainment has a way of coming into our cultural consciousness. And I think it was that Jerry Maguire film, and he's like, you complete me, or some version of that. And I'm like, that's just such a disturbing thing to say, because the reality is you're whole. You were born whole. And so yes, is your partner an asset? Of course. Do they bring things to your life? Yes. But I think ultimately it's to realize you are strong and solid on your own, and never think that you need somebody else to be complete. It's they're an addition.
That's great. You know, that really changes how I see that line in that movie, because that's always stood out to me, and you hear it repeated so many times, and I think that's so sage of you.
It drives me nuts, that line.
Yeah. It's going to drive me.
So romanticize it. So it's like, what? No, you have it all already. You do.
Yeah. Okay. I was complete before, and now I've added you know? Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, let's not hand that down. That's what my big thing is, right?
Yeah, like, let's be done with that. Let's be done with that romantic notion and elevate connection as opposed to completion. So,
you couldn't have said it better.
Oh, well, thank you. I have spent the last hour inspired by you, so I feel even more in tune with my own intimacy and my own relationship. One last question for my listeners, really, is what do you want to ask of them, and what would you like to encourage of them?
Well, I think I would say that, and again, this resonates with something we talked about earlier, so I'm going to ask anybody listening to this in this moment right now, can you picture the sex and relationship that your heart most desires? Because that really is where it starts. And I find that so many, in my experience, individuals, couples that I've worked with, they really can't picture it, or they struggle to picture it. And I'm like, well, that's where we start, because that's the block. So just know it starts with picturing it, imagining it, stepping into it, how it looks, how it feels. Because if you can do that and you can create it and you can show up for it. And that's sort of my tagline, which is creating relationships you love. We all have the capacity, and it's about showing up for it.
I don't think there is another question to follow that. So thank you, Dr. Megan, for being on Lovegasm and being part of our Make Love More interview series. Lovegasm is produced by Greg Corbin and is a production of Summer's Love Company. I'm Summers McKay. Thanks for joining me for this conversation, and we hope we've inspired you to make love more. Join us next time on Lovegasm.